You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Mary Temple, and she's calling from Williamsburg in Brooklyn. Mary, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Brainerd. It's really nice to be here today.
So, Mary, I want to talk about your art and projects one at a time, but to give us a snapshot, I know you're working on more things at once. What are you working on now in total?
Yeah, well, I have a project that, you know, most of my projects are series that begin at some point and then end shortly thereafter as I feel like I've kind of wrapped a project up. But there's one that doesn't fit in that description, and it's my light installations, which are a series of paintings that look like there's natural light coming into a room, and it the light describes the architecture, and there most often is a small amount of plant shadow in it so that it creates the illusion of there's an outside light hitting an inside space. And these are all hand-painted, and often there's a floor portion that's a hardwood floor that's stained. So people can walk on this surface and they can't change the light. So they're believing that it's light, but they can't cast a shadow. It's kind of this Peter Pan moment where what they're expecting to happen doesn't happen. And so I just finished a big public art piece in that series. And that series, because it so often is ephemeral, you know, the pieces are up in a museum for maybe 6 weeks, possibly a year, and then they don't exist anymore. So that body of work continues since 2002, and I think I'll continue to do it a long while.
Tell me about the other projects, because then I'm going to want to talk about some of those pieces. And what else are you working on concurrently?
Yeah, so then there's a drawing project that I did that has ended. It was from 2007 to 2012, and every day I drew a world leader, and I decided whether I felt what that leader had done in the world was bringing about world peace or not. And so that decision is how I placed the portrait that I drew, a portrait of their face. And it was high on the page if I felt positive, and lower on the page if I felt what they did would not bring about world peace. And I continued to do that every year. And then as soon as I would finish the drawing, it was often being exhibited at a museum. So I would scan it and send that picture, you know, the digital image, which, you know, the image that I drew from came from the web. I'm sending it back in to the web as a digital image. It goes to the museum. I've set them up with a high-res printer and beautiful Hanamu paper. They print that drawing that I've just finished, or finished just the night before, first thing in the morning, and they hang it in the museum so that it's almost a Twitter feed. I mean, it's so much the daily news, and so it many times it had just happened hours before, so you'd walk into a museum and see something that reflected the last moment of news. Anyway, I did that project for 5 years, and it's done now, and I finished it the day that Barack Obama won his second election. But since then, curators have asked me if we can make prints from the archive. And so I work sometimes with curators, and we make a selection of drawings from the project. Mm-hmm. And so I'm putting together right now a group of drawings that are all women leaders, and they're basically just getting shit done. Mm-hmm. And it's a response to what felt like a very misogynist year of election politics, and, you know, that we couldn't get a woman elected this year, and how disheartening that is. And anyway, the drawings that have all, you know, were all drawn during that five-year period are now reprinted in pink, and before they were just black ink. They're now going to be in a show at Space in Pittsburgh. And there would just be a line of women leaders in all different countries throughout the world doing stuff.
Wow. Okay. So, and that's that's the end of the things that you're working on at the moment, right?
No. I also do paintings that are text-based. And those I started in 2014, and they were really a response, or came out of the Currency drawings. Currency was the name of the project, the five-year project. And those paintings were an attempt to try to get back to paintings on canvas, which I hadn't done in about 10, 11 years. And they were short political phrases that I wanted to do using bright colors and a lot of paint. And I had kind of lost faith in painting in that way. When I went to Skowhegan in 1999, I just didn't know if painting could really say what I wanted to say in political and social observation. And in 2013, I started making paintings that kind of answer that for me now. And that's mainly what I'm involved in right now.
Very good. And have we left anything out before we go over the details of these?
No, I think those are the three things that keep me busy.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like you are busy. So I want to talk about some of the permanent works or semi-permanent works that we started out talking about, the light installation type work. But before we go into that, Is there also a gallery that's representing you right now? Because you said you know, some of these works tend to go into museums. Does that happen through your gallery,
yeah,
or are you? It does.
Oh no, I was just saying, yeah. Like, oh, I understand what you're saying. No, it doesn't happen through the gallery, because my gallery closed at the beginning of this year. It was Mixed Greens that I was with for nearly 15 years. And I had a really beautiful relationship with them, and they just decided that they were going to all do other projects. So they closed their doors at the very beginning of 2016. And but before that, we had a really great relationship, and you know, they did sometimes bring me things, but I think I did as much work in that front as they did. I think at some point when you've been making art for 10 or 20 years, there are a group of curators that know you for certain projects, and when they have something in mind that they know your work fits, then they come by. And it seems like there's more momentum about that. It has more to do with momentum than about a single gallery kind of getting you shows. That's what it seems like to me in my experience.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, so you're communicating now with all the museums and public work and all the projects that you're doing. Obviously,
yeah,
without representative or intermediary, you're making all those negotiations and
yes,
if necessary,
yes,
initial
I
meetings
had,
yourself.
Yeah, but I had been for many years in terms of the public art. That wasn't something that I had the gallery represent me on. I've been doing public art since 2007, I think, and I really love doing public art. It's super difficult because there's so much admin. There's just so many things to do with administration, and no artist likes that. I don't know anybody who likes that. But it's necessary. And in order to get artwork in front of people who don't on a regular basis go to museums, like, public art's just the best way to do that. And it's so exciting to put work where people aren't expecting it. I mean, you know, I just finished a project at McCarran Park in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg. It's a couple blocks from my house. And so I get to walk by and I see people discover it.
Yeah, that's so exciting.
Really,
so double sun at McCarran Park. Is that correct?
It is. That's right. Yeah.
So to describe that again, because we went by it kind of quickly to begin with, these images, and some will, of course, be reproduced in this interview, but are images that look like they're a shadow of light, the way light streams in through a window you know, can come in through architecture, and often we see images of trees or could be other windows that are making this shadow kind of painting, but in the case of what you're exactly doing in Double Sun and other pieces, is these are painted on, as you say, sometimes floors, walls, in the case of McCarran Park, on a building, and it has the illusion. It's almost like a faux shadow that that you're painting on there. And in that case, it's some of the public works like that one. It's permanent, not temporary, as it would be in a museum, right?
Right, and that's also a wonderful, surprisingly wonderful thing for an artist who's, you know, really used to taking a philosophical kind of soloist turn to painting, which is, you know, what I've done, again, since 2002 when I started making these. You know, they would exist for a very short time. And then they, if you didn't get a great photo, and they're also incredibly subtle, so it's really hard to get a great photo of them. So in many of them just never exist again, not even in photographic form. So to have one that's permanent is really amazing and different, you know, even conceptually different, because the impermanence made sense with fading light and changing light. So to have one be always there, it I think underscores one of the conceptual underpinnings of the work, which is about wishing things could stay the same. You know, if anybody has ever said aloud or thought, "I wish this moment would never end," then they understand this artwork. Because this is, you know, this one moment that doesn't change. And so at McCarran Park, it's a painting, and it's up above on a 36-foot tall wall. So it's above eye level. And it'll be there forever because the park has permission and directions to repaint it so they can perpetually update it over the years, and it'll always be there. In other cases, the permanent work is in other materials that themselves are permanent. So in a government building, in a federal building in Houston, for example, in the lobby, I did a big piece that is limestone. And you know, with limestone, if you scratch it, it's lighter, and if you polish it, it's darker. So the entire light and dark image is from polishing and abrading the surface. So there are materials that we can, you know, make like life, excuse me, make light like that lasts forever.
Right. So in all, so in all of your public projects, that's the kind of work you're doing these from this series.
Light installations.
So whether the light installations, whether it's the medical center or other places, I mean, they are sort of seem perfect for public work too. And so when you give instructions, because that's kind of fascinating too, to, as you said, maintain or repaint, what are those instructions? I mean, you mentioned soloist, but is it the type of paint to use, how to apply it, and how to repair
and
damages,
the images,
I guess?
And so they're, which is, just doesn't happen. A repair damage means sand the whole thing off and start again, because it's not going to look, there hasn't been a fix that looks good, I don't think. I've never seen a fix that didn't look like a fix. And as soon as you call attention to the edge of a piece, like I have had people who thought they were going to like clean up the space around it, paint right to the edge. And of course that breaks the whole image down. So the thing has to, you know, because colors are never the same. If you mix up the same exact color from the paint store as the, you know, the color on the wall, it's just never going to be the same. And when we're talking about a super subtle piece, so yeah, a person who is going to reinstall this piece has a booklet that I've made that has the exact color, but the whole wall would be repainted. The dimensions of the piece, the slides of the plants, you know, and by slides I mean we do old school projection from an analog projector, not even a digital projector, because if you've ever painted from a digital projector, you know that it's like you're looking at a screen door. You know, there's this grid that just really messes with your eyes, and it's hard when you're up close. It looks fine from 10 feet back, but when you're a few inches from the wall, it's not easy to paint from. So we actually use analog painters. I have a group of assistants who have worked with me for 10 years, and they're brilliant, and I count on them, and they're available to come reinstall pieces when that needs to happen.
That's exciting. It's just such a wonderful way of working. and proposing. You know, that seems very exciting. Is there more that you're proposing like that? Are you constantly working on those or proposals for more?
Well, you know, I could, and for years I did, and then I really, really needed to do other work. I needed to do work that wasn't clear, that the outcome wouldn't be clear. So, you know, with the light installations, it's necessary that I know what it's going to look like in the end. And so there is no discovery for me. And because of that, like I said, in 2013, I just decided that I needed to discover in the studio. And so I started saying no to a lot of projects, and I started making paintings on canvas. And I still make the light installations, but the biggest part of my day is working on paintings that could very likely fail and do, and not knowing what direction they're going to go is like what I need. It's what keeps me really interested. So
and then that's what's happening in your studio at the very moment you're working.
But
on canvases
usually,
that are.
Yep. Yeah. But usually there's a long-term project ahead of me. You know, there's one public art project that I keep going one per year. I don't have one coming up right now, and I'm thrilled about that because I'm really just going to dive into the studio for a while. But I don't really go looking for them. At this point, people come to me about those, and that's great, and it's, you know, it's a happy place to be.
Very good. Well, that's exciting to hear. So let's talk a little bit about the drawings that you were doing for a while and that are really over, but were, I mean, about news, politics, as you're saying, and you're being asked to kind of revive them in turning of reprinting older works, but you're not going to continue that series the way you did, correct?
Right. Well, you know, with the election happening the way it did, I may have to revisit this project in some way, but it'll be different if I do. I don't think it can be an everyday project. It was so difficult to make a drawing every day while still doing other disciplines. So, you know, I was traveling all over the world doing these light installation pieces while still making, first of all, researching through websites. Sometimes the research would take hours before I would decide what story about a world leader I was going to draw. Then there had to be a serviceable portrait of that person in the news somewhere for me to use to draw from them. And then while I'm traveling to whatever country I'm in, I have to have a scanner with me so that I can scan that image to send it to the drawing center or site Santa Fe or wherever I was showing this body of work, and they needed to be able to print it in the morning. So I had to finish it by midnight. That was just my own rule, and get it to them in time. So it was really a difficult project to not miss a day, you know, to just really not miss a day for 5 years, no vacations. It was so tough. So I'm really glad I did it. But I can't imagine doing that again in that same way. But then now that I feel so disheartened about what's happened in our country, and I can't really imagine not engaging these topics in some way. And drawing is so much a part of my life that I think there probably will be drawings that happen.
Well, because in a way, I mean, it's also a way of being kind of immersed with a kind of text. We all read the news you know, in newspapers or blogs or Huffington Post or Facebook, but but to be drawing it every day, drawing images that are pulling from the news, you know, very often politics, as you were doing, also is kind of a way of studying it, right? I mean, the reason I asked that is I did a project, you know, that was where I was handwriting out a whole book, and it allows you to be kind of immersed in that book in a way that reading would never do. So I would imagine you doing these drawings, it's also, I mean, for better or worse, a relationship to the news that's very intimate.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that I made an important part of the project was that I wanted to get opposing news So I would pick a story, but I would try to find a few different sites that would take a different angle or take a different side before I drew it. So yeah, I really knew what was going on. I knew who was the leader more than I ever have in my life, you know, the leader of different countries. And with every day reading more about that one story, I would learn more about the history of a given country. And it was really exciting, and I loved the project for that reason. But I mean, and I would, whatever form that project takes from here out, I mean, I want to be an artist who's invested and responding to, you know, always to social and political situations and in various ways.
And I mean, so to be clear, when you made those drawings every day, how would they get out? I mean, you're exactly after a drawing is complete of an event, a news event, how would it get out into the world?
So I would scan it that either that evening or first thing in the morning, as soon as I finished it, or first thing in the morning, I would scan it and send it as an email to whatever institution was exhibiting it. Or it, later, just put it up on my website. So all of them are on my website, marytemple.com. So every day by, let's say 10 o'clock in the morning, it was posted somewhere either in physically in a brick and mortar space or on the web. So we just kind of went through 5 years that way every day.
That's
you know,
exciting.
There were threads throughout it. And you know, what's amazing is when curators come to me now and we start looking through them because we're going to do a short print from it. We are always, both the curator and I, are always so surprised that everything that happened during those 5 years, we're still talking about. Nothing really is resolved and nothing is different. You know, it was in the middle of the Arab Spring, and here we are still talking about Syria every day in the news, you know, and just same stuff.
Right. It's incredible how things cycle. I mean, even with this really devastating election, you know, to me, it's moved into a realm of kind of like the Mad King. You know, I don't think it's just that. It's just that this guy's, you know, far right. I don't think he is even far right, although he's that too. It's more like King Charles or all these other kings that were. They were kind of mentally ill, and
I think he's mentally ill. I do.
You know, in some way, I mean, everything from the Twitter to what's going on in the Post, it just seems the idea that we're, you know, in this day and age, going to let someone like that actually become president, and even if we didn't, would that mean his vice president would take over? I mean, you know.
I know.
I mean, it's just Hillary should have been there. It just doesn't make sense that she's not, and it's so.
No. It's so upsetting.
So in a way, I mean, in that context, I mean, artists, I mean, it sounds like it's part of what you're feeling. Artists all do play a special role now. I don't think it has to be necessarily political art, but I think, as some people have said, oh, how can I still make art, or I'm going to Canada? But I think this is when you have to make art, right? This is whether it's directly political or not. So,
yeah. And things that may not seem at first political can be really, really political. You know, about a year ago, I started making these paintings that were just the word yes. And it's really funny the responses that I get from them, because most people are like, yes, these are just so positive. And they're really bright colors and mark making. And I don't have them on my website yet. And that's intentional. But when I started them, I was actually thinking about how for women, yes, isn't necessarily agreement or assent. You know, it can just as likely be that a woman is trying to bring a situation, like disarm a situation, and by not disagreeing, she may be taken as giving assent. I mean, and Trump made that very clear with his Access Hollywood quote, right? Essentially what women were allowing him to do to them. So, you know, just because you couldn't fight him off, that was taken as a yes. And so I wanted to see if I could make paintings that would be the word yes and multiple yes, you know, like there may be 15 yeses on a small canvas. And could there be could it seem ambiguous? And it's funny because I think they sometimes do, but just as often when I walk in the studio and I'm surrounded, because there are, you know, 30 probably paintings now in my studio that say yes, I have this feeling of, you know, I'm like this American zombie positivism. I walk in, I'm like, yes. And it's so funny because they came from a completely different and political place, but they kind of move in and out, like depending on what I've last read. And when I'm disheartened and I'm in there, I'm like, yeah, they seem very ambivalent and ambiguous. But other times they are affirmation, and I think political work isn't necessarily a picture, a portrait of a world leader.
Right. It
can be other things.
Absolutely. That makes sense. And so before we close the interview, I know we've talked a little bit about your paintings, and that's what you're involved in now, and that seems like a place where you're able to, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but be very intuitive and experiment more. Mm-hmm. Is that what's happening, or do you have a process that's more specific than that?
There's a process with these. I'm starting with a print of, with most of them, they were a print from my, I scanned some scarves from my grandmother, and I've started, and then I print them. And I started painting on them and printing them again and again, so that there is this dissolution of the original image. But anyway, so it's a specific start. But from there, yes, it's a lot of experimentation and a lot of failure and surprise and discovery. So it starts out in a very specific way, but it leads to experimentation.
It's great talking to you, Mary. Before we go, I want to ask you the question I always ask people that I interview lately, which is, what books are you reading now?
Well, I always have a huge stack of books on my nightstand, and so I'll tell you what's at the top of that stack. I love the artist, the writer Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. She's a Nigerian writer. And I just finished Half of Yellow Sun. And then her short story book is The Thing Around Your Neck. But the thing that your readers might, if they haven't already read her, might want to listen to is an essay I just finished, We Should All Be Feminists. And it's also a TEDx talk. So you can just listen to it in half an hour and get a sense of who she is. Amazing, beautiful author. But then also the very top is Mouse, and that's Art Spiegelman's Complete Mouse, which is a graphic novel. And the reason that's on the top is a friend of mine, Jeff Bergman, is doing a protest called Learn as Protest at the Trump Tower Lobby, which we now, you know, call the White House North. And he's encouraging people to come and read aloud texts that they think are appropriate right now. He's been reading Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States and others, and I'm going to be taking this and reading from Mao soon.
That sounds very appropriate. Mao is certainly a wonderful but very dark story, of course, of Holocaust survival.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary, for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure, and I wish you well with your future projects in your studio.
Thank you, Brainerd. It's been a pleasure for me, too.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.